So we're continuing with Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we're discussing a rather lengthy purport of the Nectar of Devotion, or rather Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where Jiva Goswami is commenting on Rupa Goswami's verse describing those that are eligible for the beginning of bhakti. This is called Kanishta Adhikari. Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam, and Uttam. And then to explain Kanishta Adhikari, he cites a verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, where Krishna is telling Arjuna, there's four kinds of people which approach me. Arto artarti jigyasur gyani cha bharatarshapa. So these are, maybe you've heard this verse, it's in 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He said, people approach God when they're in distress, they're in anxiety, they're suffering, or they want money, or they're inquisitive, what is God, who is God, or they're actually wise people, they want to understand God. So all these four categories of people that approach God are all considered to be beginners, neophytes, kanishtas. And there's examples of each one. So Jiva Goswami, he has a very elaborate purport on this verse in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And basically, he spends a lot of time discussing the jnani. Because one who has some knowledge of the Lord, he is actually more eligible for devotion, or actual surrender to the Lord, than one who is simply distressed. Someone who is distressed or wants money, or is simply inquisitive, he may approach the Lord in his distress, or in his inquisition, but when his inquisition dies down, or his distress is removed, then he doesn't care about the Lord. But the jnani, or the wise man, he actually develops knowledge of the Lord. He's very keenly interested to understand God from the basis of knowledge. So he's actually more eligible to practice devotional service. He's the best of the kanishtas. So Jiva says there's three types of jnanis. There's one type of jnani, or man of knowledge, who has knowledge of Krishna's powers. Powers means vibhuti. Vibhuti jnan. Or we say Aishvarya. Sometimes you've heard this term, Aishvarya jnan. Aishvarya Gyan Mahi Bhakta. That this devotee's knowledge of the Lord is mixed with knowledge of his greatness. Something like, of course they aren't Kanishtas, they're Nitya Siddhas, eternal associates. But the Devaki and Vasudev, they had knowledge of Krishna. They understood, but they understood that Krishna is actually God. And he showed his godly feature to them. He was born with four arms in Mathura in the prison house. Vasudev Krishna, and they were awed by it. They were afraid, and they offered prayers. But then there's a type of jnani whose knowledge is mixed with sweetness. This is called Madhurya Mahi Gyan. Madhurya Mahi Gyan, his knowledge of Krishna is mixed with sweetness. Rather, he likes the sweetness of the Lord. So, of course, Mother Yashoda, she didn't really understand that Krishna was God or Bhagavan. She only thought, She had knowledge. She knew that Krishna is my son, and I'm his mother. So, but she's a pure devotee. But there's some jnanis that have that, and there's some jnanis have both. So he says this. Now in this verse, Vishnu Chakravarti also has a comment which is included here. Bhanu Swami translated. In this Bhagavad Gita, these persons, Arto, Artarti, Jignyasur, Gyani, Cha, Bharatarshapa, there's four of them, four classic devotees that are mentioned there, are referred to there. So the one who's in distress is Gajendra. Gajendra's story is told in the 8th canto of Bhagavatam. He's the elephant that was being eaten by the crocodile, and he was losing his strength. But he was only an elephant because of some curse. In his previous life, he was a king. But he became cursed to become an elephant. And somehow or other, by the arrangement of the Lord, the super soul, he was able to remember some prayers from his last life. There's also a story in the 5th canto of Bhagavatam of Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj became affectionate to a deer, and he took the body of a deer in next life. But he lived in the forest near all the sages and hermitages. And when he left his body, the deer that Atma in the deer's body, Maharaj Bharat, who is now a deer, Mriga, he was able to chant Hare Krishna or Narayan Vishnu, some name of God. So then someone will say, that's quite unusual. I never heard of an animal. Animals don't have the capacity to speak. But it's not unusual when you think of the Lord's Yogamaya Shakti or Chintya Shakti. The Lord gave that facility. And there's one verse in the first canto, chapter 9. Lord Bhishmadev is praying that for the serious devotee, when he's leaving his body, the Lord appears in his mind. For someone who's a very serious devotee, it's first canto, chapter 9, I can't remember the verse, Bhishma's preaching. And he says, for one who's a serious devotee, then the Lord comes at the time of death, appears in his mind and carries him to the spiritual world. So the Lord makes fantastic arrangements for his devotees, even enables a deer to chant Hare Krishna. So Gajendra is another story, again in the 8th canto. In the 5th canto, a deer is chanting Nam, Bhagavan Nam. Then the 8th canto, an elephant is chanting. And of course, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Lord Chaitanya went through Jarigan Forest, the elephants and the deer and the lions were all chanting. That's explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says that the deer were dancing. The deer were dancing with the lions. And they were no more envious of each other. Deer, usually the tiger, they eat the deer for lunch. But through the influence of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, they were dancing, chanting, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. So this is God's influence, the power of God. God can do anything. If he can't do anything, he's not God. You can doubt, you can't do it. We can't make an elephant chant Hare Krishna. We can make a minor bird or a parrot chant Hare Krishna, maybe.
Hare Krishna.
But we can't make a elephant or a deer chant. From the same way, Gajendra, the elephant, at the time of leaving his body, he plucked one lotus flower from this lake at Gandamandana Mountain, and he held his trunk up as an offering to Vishnu. And he offered a prayer in Sanskrit. So he's an example. Vishnu says that Gajendra, he was greedy to attain the sweetness of the Lord. So he gave up his desire to get relief from suffering and became a pure devotee. So initially, Gajendra, he was a Kanishta Adhikari. He had the lowest qualification for practicing devotional service, the lowest eligibility, Adhikari. Eligibility qualification. He was in trouble. He was in a heap of trouble, as they say. Big trouble. He was getting eaten alive. That's definitely a problem. So, arta jignasu. So he wanted some relief, some good object. And so he was just pulling and pulling with his own strength. But he was in the water, so he didn't have much strength in the water. He's a land animal. But crocodile, very strong in the water. So he was dragging him deeper into the water and gobbling up his leg. But then at a certain point, he was so stressed out, as to use common terminology, that in his distress, he simply forgot about his distress. Sarvasya chaham riti sanavishto matasmatir gyanam aponam cha. From Krishna comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. He forgot about his distress by Krishna's mercy and remembered. What did he remember? He remembered his last life. His last life when he was a king, he was a Vaishnav king. And he used to worship Vishnu, and he would chant so many stutis and stotrams. You see many people, they, even kings or Brahmins or whatever, they have their daily routine. They chant Gopal Sahasranam or Radha Chalisa, Hanuman Chalisa, Vishnu Sahasranam, Radha Sahasranam, Durga Sahasranam, so many prayers, stutis, stotrams, as their regular religious practice. Although they're not so serious, but they do something. Like some Christians go to church every day, or like ourselves, maybe every day we chant one Shikshastakam. Cheto Darpanam Arjanam. like this. So that same prayer that he chanted in his previous life as a king, that was recorded or registered in his chitta as a samskara, bhakti samskara. And that samskara traveled with him. When the soul left the body, it went on the consciousness. The consciousness went with the soul, the chitta, and entered the body of the elephant. And now, in that distress, somehow Krishna has given him remembrance of that. In your last life, you offered this prayer. So now, as in the elephant's body, he's offering a prayer. And it's a very... the verse is there in 8th canto. It's a prayer about the beauty of the Lord and the sweetness of the Lord. So now, although initially he was not very qualified, had the lowest qualification for pure bhakti, but due to this distress, he turned for help. Then he forgot the distress and simply offered a pure prayer. So his knowledge of the Lord was mixed with sweetness, and Vishwanath is telling here. And then he gave up that all that ambition to be relieved, and he became a pure devotee. And then he cites the example of the sages at Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka Rishi. They gave up their desire to know about Swargaloka and other topics, because all the sages gathered there to do a big yajna to offset the influence of Kali Yuga, and they were more interested in liberation. They wanted to get out of the hellfires of Kali Yuga and go to heavenly planets. So yajnas are usually performed for that. These elaborate yajnas, Gomeda Yajna, Ashwamedha Yajna, they're karmakandiya functions. They're not really a limb of Shuddha Bhakti. But then, when Suta Goswami came there, then they inquired from him. As you know, Bhagavatam, there's so much dialogue between the sages and the Naimisharanya and Suta. And then by association with him, they were also considered jnanis. They had some knowledge of the Lord, mixed with Aishwarya. Then they became pure devotees. So their category of these personalities is they were inquisitive about the Lord. Now the next person, Artarti, who wanted lots of wealth from the Lord, is Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj wanted to have a bigger kingdom than his father. So then he approached the Lord. So he's considered a Kanishta also. But by the mercy of the Lord directly, by Darshan, he gave up his desire for a kingdom and he became a pure devotee, Dhruva Maharaj. He's considered to be Karma Mishra Bhakta, and then he became pure devotee. And the four Kumaras, they're considered to be Jnanis, as we mentioned, Jnan Mishra Bhaktas. So now these Jnanis that are actually of the higher order that are represented in this verse of Bhagavad Gita, Jnanicha Bharatarshava, the four Kumaras are there. But by the mercy of the Lord, they gave up their desire for liberation and they became pure devotees. So now, in his progression, this whole section of Vaidhi Sadhana, it's a long, many, many verses discussing Vaidhi Sadhana, the eligibility for Vaidhi Sadhana. Now in the next verse, after talking about Kanishta Adhikaris and mentioning four examples of Kanishta Adhikaris, and Dhruva and Gajendra and four Kumaras and the sages and the Naimisharanya, Shonaka, then he explains the problems with material desires, because these personalities, they got free from their Kanishta, from their low qualification, their least qualification, their immature faith. They got free by the mercy of devotees or by the mercy of the Lord directly. So then he kind of steps back and he speaks this verse. It's just quite famous. Bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi ridivartate tavat bhakti sukasyatra katam abhyudayo bhavet. Goswami, he poses a question. He says, how can the happiness of bhakti arise in the heart when the witch of desire for enjoyment and liberation remains there? So this is, Prabhupada often discusses this, bhukti mukti spriha pishachi. In other words, if we're holding on to desires, as it says in Gita, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Maya Chetasam. It says that one who's attracted to material opulence and sense enjoyment, the resolute determination of devotional service cannot take place. It was a similar idea. It says, Bhukti Mukti Pishachi. Says that the desire for bhukti, which means sense enjoyment, just, I want to enjoy the body. I like to eat, sleep, be merry, happy. This is bhukti and mukti, desire for liberation. These are like witches. And witches, they're, well, they say, pishachi. Pishachi means a witch. We would probably, in common terms, or modern terms, we would be more familiar with the term vampire. Count Dracula. A vampire, Frankenstein, or whatever. I don't know. Well, no, that's a different one. Count Dracula is another count. But they have the peculiarity, whatever it is, of catching people and sucking their blood. And Pishachis, they often like, there's a class of Pishachis, and they're called Putana. Although we say Putana is a particular witch that tried to kill Krishna and Gokul, but Putana is actually a class. And the Putanas are special Pishachis because they specialize. They've gone into, they majored in specialization in college. So Putanas is a group of witches that specialize in sucking the blood of children. They kill children and then they suck their blood. Whereas Pishachis, they don't really, they're not choosy. They may catch anyone, you know, any adult, and but they're not particular. So, in other words, you don't want to meet one. That's the basic idea. So this is a very graphic example that the desire for sense gratification, liberation, is like a witch because they suck the lifeblood of bhakti. They suck the essence, and if someone's sucking your blood, then you can't be very healthy, especially if they keep drinking for too long. So this is what happens, that bhakti gets destroyed by the presence of this witch in the heart. It says spriya riddhi. It says spriha yavat pishachi riddhi, that this witch lives in the heart. It's so easy to externally follow the principles and practices of bhakti yoga. Like they say, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. Can you translate that into Russian? You can fool. Fool means you can cheat. You can pretend, oh, he's a big devotee. You can fool some of the people for some of the time. But you can't fool, is that how it goes? All the people for all the time. So the point is that externally we may make a show of devotion, but if this internally we're not really surrendered, because this is the lakshana, srup lakshana of bhakti is internal surrender. How much the heart is actually dedicated and attached to the Lord. Even externally you may fall on your nose, this way, that way, have a difficult time. But inside, you're convinced that hell or high water, I have to serve Krishna. I have to attain love for Krishna, despite all odds and obstacles. Even externally, I may not be making a good show. But this person will go the distance. They will actually be successful in the long run. Or someone else, because internally, they're actually attached to the Lord. And but because of their prarabdha is so overwhelming, they have to wade through all that and suffer all that opposition until they become purified. And then they become very, very staunch. You could say they're slow starters, but it's based on the heart is so sincere. And other people make a very fast external show, kind of like a shooting star. They make a lot of light for a few seconds. Then, oh, where'd it go? Remember so-and-so, and remember so-and-so, and remember so-and-so? Where are they now? So it's like a shooting star. Whereas the slow and steady turtle of Bhakta Turtle, that just keeps plugging along, he's the one that Krishna appears in their mind at the time of death and takes them back to Godhead. as Bhishma is telling in the 9th chapter of first canto. And even that's an interesting point that we've said sometimes, that we have such a superficial understanding of devotion. We say, oh, if you chant Hare Krishna when you die, then you're liberated. Generally, people think that. Oh, they say, oh, so Krishna died the other day in Moscow. Some devotees were there on his bedside. Was he chanting Hare Krishna? This is the first question. When he died. And they'll say, no. He just went. And then he died. Oh, too bad for Krishna Das. He didn't make it. But Krishna says in Gita, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, tyachityanti kalevaram. Tyachityanti kalevaram. When you give up the body, tyagi, when you renounce or let go of, release the material body, the atma, then where you go or what you attain, it depends on your bhavam. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam. Smaran bhavam. Who are you and what are you remembering at the time of death? You may even be chanting Hare Krishna and thinking of something else. Once this point was brought up to Bhakti Sananda Saraswati, they said, oh, Mahatma Gandhi was a great Mahatma. Great, great devotee. He chanted, Hey Ram! Hey Ram! At the end of life, because he dedicated a later part of his life for the freedom of India. And he was working so hard for his countrymen, trying to bring equality and happiness to all of them, freedom from the imperialism and oppression of British rule, independent rule for India. And he tried so hard to serve his countrymen. And 24 hours a day, and Prabhupada wrote him a letter, invited him to join the preaching mission, use his influence to spread Chaitanya's Prem Dharma. And he, of course, didn't get a reply. Maybe he never got the letter. Can't say. But nevertheless, he was totally dedicated to the cause of nationalism, saving India from the British rule, overthrow, and working so hard for the Indians. And then one Indian showed his gratitude by taking a gun and shooting him in the back. So this is life. You work so hard for the Indian people, and one Indian kills you, murders you. So if you dedicate your whole life to Krishna's service, Krishna's not going to shoot you in the back. I never heard any descriptions of Krishna coming up. Hey, Krishna Das, you dedicated your whole life Ananya Bhakti. Ananya Bhakti, pure Bhakti your whole life. Ananya Shchintiyantamam Yejana Paripashate. Okay, now turn around. Unload your magazine. And Krishna Das's chest. Tung, 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 tung. That doesn't happen. Krishna is very grateful. Bhaktivatsal. He embraces the devotee at the time of death. So he chanted, Hey Ram. So they asked Bhakti Siddhanta, so he's a great devotee, he chanted, Hey Ram. So Mahatma Gandhi must have gone to Ayodhya or Ram Leela. Isn't that right, Guruji? And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, yes, that is not right. Yes, that is not right. Isn't that right? Yes, it is not right. You are wrong. Because what is the backing of his name? What is behind it? What is the support? What is the foundation? What is the conception? What is the mantra artha chintata? What idea was he thinking? Chintata, mantra, art. What is the meaning of the mantra, the conception, the backing? Is it a blank bullet? Is it a blank, not even a bullet, but a blank, whatever they call it, a blank shot that they use at track meets? They have a little gun, and they pull the trigger, boom, and all the people start running. 440 meters or whatever, track race. They have some gun, starting gun. But there's no bullet, only gunpowder. So the pin or whatever, it hits the cap and then it ignites a spark and then the gunpowder goes boom. But if there's no bullet in front of the powder, then no effect. The bullet is what kills you, not the powder. So the backing. There must be some bullet there to be effect. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that Mahatma Gandhi, he was chanting national nam, nation nam. Rastriya means nation. Rastriya nam. National nam. Russia nam. American nam. India nam. Because his whole absorption, his mind, heart, feelings, words, thoughts, dreams, writing, everything was India, 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 free India, free India, free India. British quit India. This was his Maha Mantra. Free rule for India. British quit India. Free rule for India. British quit India. This is his Maha Mantra. Right? So at the time of death, he was thinking, oh, my India. So he was chanting national nam, so he didn't get liberation. Krishna didn't appear in his mind. Ram didn't appear. He took birth again in India. So, Mahatmanastimam partha daivyam prakritam ashrita. Krishna says, who is a Mahatma? Mahatma is one who's daivyam prakritam ashrita. He's taking shelter of daivi prakriti. Daivi prakriti means the transcendental energy. The transcendental energy is Vishnu bhakti. Vishnu bhakti is transcendental. It is not produced to the trigunamayi. It is not gunamayak. It is transcendental. It comes from the other side of the causal ocean. This is called the Karna Samudra. And in this side, everything has a cause. Every single thing in this reality has a cause and effect. But as soon as you cross the causal ocean, you get into Paravyoma and Vaikuntha. This is called the Ahoitaki Dham, or Akaran Dham. There is no cause there. Everything happens by Ichashakti, by the will of the Lord. There's no cause. You can't do this and get that. Even bhakti, you can't do something to get bhakti. Bhakti is a gift. Bhakti is bestowed. Bhakti manifests by her own sweet will, because she's a Surup Shakti of the Lord. She's Ladini and Samvit of the Lord. Samvit Shakti and Ladini. So she's transcendental. We don't make it happen. We can position ourselves. We're acting in a way that's trying to act favorably and pleasingly. Yasya prasada. Everything's based on prasada. Yasya prasada. No prasad, then you're very hungry. So no prasad means no mercy, then no perfection. No mercy, no God. So fortunately, there are agents of mercy traversing the earth. They're known as gurus and acharyas. And they give mercy. But they test. They don't just throw it anywhere. There must be some adhikar, some qualification to receive. So this verse, there's some another addition is Bhukti Mukti Spriha Yavat Pishachi. Prabhupada, this verse is also in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The witch of material desire. I'm being haunted. Sometimes they say haunted. The haunted house. The house has witches or ghosts or goblins or spirits in the house. So it's explained, and of course it has Vedic connection, that there's different subtle beings. For example, some guy, he has a nagging wife. Standard procedure. So his wife is always nagging. It's my usual. I always give the women a hard time, right? Maybe a nagging husband. Okay, we have a nagging husband. There's a wife as a nagging husband. And the husband's always bothering her. So anyway, the story is like this. The man is frustrated. Let's say some man is frustrated with life in general. So he goes out to the edge of the village and he takes a rope and he ties it around a tree branch. And then he comes out and he ties around his neck and he rides out there on his horse. Right? And then he stands on his horse and then he tells the horse to get going. And he jumps off his horse and then the rope goes, "Oh! Ah!" And he gets strangled to death and he's hanging on the tree. But because he committed suicide, then the Atma enters the tree. The soul of that suicide victim enters that tree. And he lives in that tree as a ghost. And sometimes the villagers later, they go to that tree and the funny things happen. And they say, "Oh, this tree, I think there's some ghost in it." Then they start worshipping that tree. They bring some articles. And if it's India, they know there's some different articles to satisfy ghosts. Meat and different kinds of things they offer to ghosts. So they start doing Bhuta Puja. They start worshipping the ghost in that tree. And the ghost is happy, eats those offerings somehow or other, and then maybe gets some blessings. Then some storm comes, or some arrangement of the Lord, maybe his ghost time is over or whatever, his lifetime is over. And then that tree, lightning hits that tree, and the tree topples over. And then, but still the ghost may be staying there. So then these witches, they do puja of that tree, they take a branch of that tree. They take a branch of that tree, which has and they keep the ghost inside that tree, in that branch, from that tree. Because the ghost is part of that tree. Then they take that broomstick, but broom is a type of, like weed, but from the tree. And then they sit on that branch. And then because it has all the power of this ghost, then they can fly in the air. That's why you see these little, when you're little kids, you see witches with a black hat and they're flying on usually it's a broomstick, but it's not a broom like you sweep the floor. It's actually a branch of a tree. And the power to fly is because the ghost is inside the branch. This is witchcraft. this is how it works. So if you want to fly, if you want to save money next time coming to India, but you may have to get some clearance with the Federal Aviation Administration to land in the Delhi airport. When you come flying by on your tree branch. So this is the witch of material desire, which is residing in our heart. Pishachi. Bhukti Mukti Pishachi. Spriha Riddhi Pishachi. Spriha means sporty, means manifest. And just as a witch will come in the night when you're sleeping and then bite your neck ever so lightly and maybe suck some blood and fly away, like these vampires do. And every night taking a little bit of blood and you're getting weaker and weaker day by day. And then after a few days you say, what is these strange marks on my neck? And you understand that it's something beyond the usual occurrence. And and then you inquire, you find out there's someone coming at night. So this is the problem, we're trying to make advancement in bhakti. But someone is sucking our energy. And that's because we're holding on to material desire. So this is Prabhupada often would preach on this verse about this witch of material desire. It's this addition here from Prabhupada's godbrother, Banamaraj. He has some nice purports sometimes on these different verses. He says, he translates this, so long as the witch of longing for bhukti, which means enjoyment of earthly and heavenly pleasures, and mukti, which means heavenly pleasures and merging in the absolute Brahman, occupy the heart of an individual, how can the supreme delight of bhakti arise in that heart? So in other words, bhakti produces happiness in the heart. But if we're still have these witches are there, then we can't experience the happiness. Just like a person who is ghostly haunted, he's always having mental problems. He can't feel any happiness in life. So we can't feel any happiness of bhakti. Bhakti is made of happiness. Bhakti is happiness. That's the very nature of bhakti. It's made of ladini. Ladini means bliss, joy, happiness, ecstasy. And it has so many increments. Increments of quality and quantity, depending on our advancement of consciousness. But if there's nothing there, then that means to have this strong influence of this witch. So the happiness of bhakti can't rise when the witch of enjoyment remains there. In other words, we have to do exorcism. We have to drive out the witch. So the question is, why is bhukti compared to a demoness? Material enjoyment is compared to a demoness because it covers the desire for bhakti with other desires. Mukti is a demoness because the reference point is one's self and not Krishna. That's a very interesting point. Mukti is a demoness because the reference point is one's self and not Krishna. In other words, I want mukti. I want out. So that's a demon. That's like a witch. It's not centered on Krishna. It's something else. Something else. I want something. So desires for enjoyment and liberation are not proper for a sadhaka. And these are not there in a perfected devotee. So there's one acharya that wrote commentaries on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, who's also considered to be bona fide by the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And his name is Mukundadas, Sri Mukundadas. So he says that this fiend or witch that pollutes the heart can be removed by the grace of the Lord alone. And this happened with the elephant king Gajendra, Dhruva, Shonak, and other rishis, and the Chatusanas, which means the four Kumaras. So these four kinds of people, those in distress, Arto, seeking wealth, Artarti, inquisitive, Jignyasu, and Gyanis, and moksha seekers who take refuge in the Lord, they're not eligible for bhakti, but when they get the mercy of the Lord or the grace of the Lord's devotee, then they can attain pure bhakti. So what Rupa Goswami has done, he has said that these four persons that are represented in verse 719 of the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam, Gajendra, and the sages, and this Dhruva, and the four Kumaras, they had some witches in their hearts, witches for mukti or bhukti, but they were driven out by grace. So now he's saying, yes, they were free from these witches. And then he goes on tomorrow to explain that if, next verse he talks about, so this is the effect, this is the negative effect, that if we're attached to sense enjoyment or we want liberation, which is we want, I want liberation, I want out, I want salvation, I want emancipation, I'm suffering, it's too much, I can't take it, let me out of here, I quit. Stop the world, I want to get off. Right? They have these things like this. So, a lot of people feel like that. It's called frustration. They turn to drugs, they turn to any kind of so-called temporary solution, palliative measure, instead of turning to God because of their impiety. They turn to some material nature. They try to solve a material problem with a material solution. The only solution is spiritual. So therefore, he's saying that this is the problem. And then he starts to explain, after this he starts explaining about the power of bhakti and prema. So we'll hear about that tomorrow. So you may only have one witch inside, hopefully, and hope she's not too strong. And by getting Guru's mercy, yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nakatikatopi, then this witch can be kicked out by Guru's kripa. And we can get serious, because that is, when that happens, then it's like a great relief. It's like climbing up a mountain with a heavy backpack, and then some little Gorkha guy comes along, or some little guy, a little Nepalese wala. He says, look, I can carry that for you for 5 rupees. And you say, be my guest, man. And then you give your backpack to him, and then you just walk freely. You can imagine carrying 20 kilos on your back, and then if someone lifts it off your back, you feel relief. Tremendous relief. So that's what happens when the witch of material desire leaves the heart of the devotee. He feels so much relief. He feels, oh, now I can get on with business. Now I can actually progress. And this is this phenomenon every advancing devotee will have to pass through. Otherwise he won't get very far. This witch will keep biting the neck and drawing her installment of blood. And then you never grow strong, because little blood is taken out of you every day. You can never be very strong. You're alive and you're showing the semblance of life and appear to have some light, looking like some life, but there's really no deep devotional substance in your character, because the witch is drawing out your life energy. Distraction. So this is Rupa Goswami is not wasting his words. He's quite careful about his analogies. He's thinking very deeply. He's saying this in his own words. He's thinking deeply. Now, what can I compare the desire for material enjoyment to, and a desire to liberation to? He could use so many analogies. but he specifically used Pishachi, blood-sucking witch. Blood is our life, rakta. That is the, we eat so much food. In the Ayurveda, they explain you eat 30 kilos of food gets converted to like a few grams of blood. And that few grams of blood gets converted to, you know, or that 10 grams of blood gets converted to ojas or semen or like this life energy, prana, ultimately prana. So much food it, and then produces blood finally, and then more, becomes more condensed into ojas ultimately. And then that blood is being eaten by the witch. So it's so much consuming, so much energy. So we're doing so much chanting and so much reading and so much work, and then the witch is eating it all up. So we're not going anywhere. So we have to face this witch head on, face on, and kick her in the teeth and drive her out. And say, out, out, no, get out, I don't want. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. This is Sharanagati. Surrender today and tomorrow, and keep surrendering, surrendering, surrendering. And finally, she quits and moves on somewhere else. Then you can actually become nishta, steady in bhakti.